Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I'm sorry for that long beginning with the nature sounds today. I was trying to connect Daniel Cooper by Skype. Daniel is now in Switzerland, and he is going to chat with the people in Switzerland very shortly. And let me type a quick message to him anyway, because I want to tell him to say hello to Marianne for me. Okay. So we're on the air. This is going to be an interesting show this afternoon. I'm going to talk about Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Harvey, overpopulation, reincarnation, your duty to yourself, seven characteristics of neutral positive thoughts, our innermost creational eye. And we're going to talk, if I didn't mention it, about reincarnation. First of all, Billy Meyer is a man who lives in Switzerland. He's 80 years old. He's written, I think, 50 books, close to 50 books. He's also taken thousands of pictures of extraterrestrial craft near his home there in Smidruti, Switzerland. He lives about 45 minutes east of Zurich in a tiny mountain village that's nestled among the beautiful green pine forests of northern Switzerland. He's been in northern Switzerland much of his life. He traveled to the Middle East, particularly when he was having contacts with his second mentor. Billy has had four or five extraterrestrial mentors. His first mentor was a man named Svath, who Billy had a contact with first when he was 5 years old. It was the first physical contact. Svath landed his silvery pear-shaped craft in a clearing near the forest where Billy was waiting for Svath. And Billy was brought up into Svath's ship as if by ghostly hands, it says in the contact reports. Svath was an extraterrestrial man of nearly 1,000 years old. He was from a race of people that originally allowed themselves to be called the Pleiadians, but they're not from our Pleiades. They exist in a different space-time configuration, some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. And if you would go there, their world would look very similar to the Earth, similar size, almost identical ecosystem. They have a yellow star, so they have blue skies, similar atmosphere. Their nature looks much the same. Many of the plants and animals from early Earth were brought to their world. They live in harmony with nature. They live by what are called the creational natural laws, the laws of the universe, like the law of love, the law of striving, the law of harmony, the law of prosperity and abundance, the law of reincarnation. They have no war. They have no disease. They have no pollution. They have no social conflict, no social injustices. They live. All right, let me put some nature sounds up here. I've got another little issue to deal with here. Sorry, guys. Sorry, I'm back. I had to break up a cat fight. I'll just leave it at that. And hopefully it's really broken up. Life never ceases to have its little interruptions and challenges. You know, it's interesting. I was talking about Sloth, and I was talking about Billy's early contacts. And really, I was trying to give you kind of an overview more than anything. Billy met with Sloth for 11 years. Sloth taught him many things. Billy lived a difficult childhood. He was punished often because he missed a lot of school. He was kind of an outcast in his village. But by the same token, the people were very drawn to his wisdom, his personality. So when Billy was 16 years old, in 1953, he got his second mentor because Foth was nearing the end of his life. His second mentor was a woman named Asket, a woman from the Tao universe, who sent a robotic craft to pick Billy up. Billy went to the top of a hill, a meeting place where he often would meditate. And then on this hill landed a robotic craft with three strange kind of circular landing pods on it. Billy was pulled up into the ship as if by ghostly hands, which is the way his contacts with Sloth went as well. The ship took off, traveled very quickly, and I'm summarizing here very much. It landed in Jordan, in the Middle East. Asket's ship, which was a 300-meter disc, landed shortly thereafterwards. And Billy and her went far below the Giza Plateau. She had landed her ship near the Sphinx, and it was cloaked. And Billy and her went far below the Giza Plateau into these old cubicle constructions, where Billy got to see a great hallway where the light seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere. He saw guards that were from the Giza intelligences, a group of negative extraterrestrials that were using religion to manipulate the people of the Earth. And the plan is to talk more about this later. But there Billy saw what were perfect replicas of the crucifixion utensils of the person that the Meyer material calls Emmanuel. And he saw a Y-shaped wooden cross, a tightly wrapped crown of thorns, blood-encrusted nails, a 2 or 3 meter staff, a purple cape, and a pouch with some precious stones in it. So Billy went and Asket, and Billy left the scene there, and Asket told him what that was all about, a discussion that lasted for 2 days. So these extraterrestrials, called the Giza intelligences, had manipulated the people of the earth through religion. And the Meyer material says that one of these extraterrestrials was a man named, well, what many people call Jehovah. Well, his name was probably Jehovah or something similar, because really there were no letter J back in the ancient world. And Jehovah is the individual that destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah with 2 small nuclear weapons. And I believe he is the individual from the Giza intelligences that caused the genocide that's described in Numbers chapter 31, where all the Midianites were killed, including the women and the children. Israel was commanded at that time to spare the virgins, which were there roughly 32,000 that were kept. So the Giza intelligences and the strange atrocities that occurred in the Old Testament are part of the bizarre and the very confusing history that's gone on here on the earth. And what's so good about the Meyer material is it kind of gives us the ability to look at this information in a more logical way. Because currently, many people look at these events through the fog of religion, which makes it very difficult to apply any kind of logic to figure this stuff out. What I want to talk about now is information from one of Billy's most important books, called The Way to Live. The Way to Live book is very interesting. It's called Die Art zu Leben in the German language. It was written between 1995 and 1997, from November 8th, 1995 to January 8th, 1997, by Edward Albert Meyer. It was translated by Vivian Legge and Dyson Devine into English. It's a bilingual book with a German appearing on the left page and the English appearing on the right page. And it also must be considered that interwoven into all of Billy's German spiritual teachings is a text, an evolution code, and all the words must be in the correct positions and be free of errors from beginning to end for this evolution code to work. And this code releases impulses from the universal storage banks, which begin to work evolutively on the reader. Even if you haven't mastered the German language, just reading this or attempting to read it or read it out loud causes these impulses to slowly penetrate into your consciousness. So that was a quick introduction to the book, The Way to Live. But one of the things that we're taught in this book is the fulfillment of your duty to yourself. And we are told to always care for your psyche, for your health. And you kind of have to be your own best friend. In other words, you have to kind of be looking out for yourself and taking care of yourself. So if you don't continually pay attention to yourself and you don't fulfill these duties, then you can become very miserable. Even suicidal thoughts can occur. You have to give yourself self-respect. And it also requires you to not do hidden things, which might make you feel ashamed. So don't do anything that you wouldn't want a stranger to see. That requires some responsibility. Do your best to speak the truth freely, openly, unvarnished, even if people are not able to hear it, even if they object to it. Now, this is something I've been trying to be better at myself. And we should always act, think, and feel decently. Don't forfeit your self-esteem. Your clothes should speak for yourself. Never let yourself appear ragged. This is something also I'm working on. Sometimes, particularly on the weekends, I get a little ragged. But you should also never lose confidence in yourself. And you may be just as wise and skillful as many other people. And one of the things that is where these things start to overlap is in the book, The Might of Thoughts, we also learn the importance of confidence. So never lose confidence in yourself. Don't despair. Do your best never to be in bad temper. And keep in mind, there are no two human beings in the whole universe who are at the same level of evolution. So all human beings develop at different areas at a different level of evolution. So there's kind of a mixture going on. So you might be more evolved in one particular area than another, but not as evolved in another area. If you want to fulfill your duty to yourself, never let yourself be controlled by desires. So we have to live in this kind of detached, neutral, positive way. Never let yourself be controlled by the desires to play the shining lead role in anything. And boredom is a huge pitfall. If you're falling into boredom, then addictions come in, vices come in. Be a pleasant companion to yourself. Be able to entertain yourself. And only become idle when you need relaxation. Boredom, the poverty of thought, self-centeredness lead to a kind of deteriorating situation where your inner nature becomes under-evolved, so to speak. So everything in the whole universe in some way is connected to this fulfilling the duty to yourself. It's really interesting. This all comes from my notes, which I just covered there. I couldn't find it in the book, and that's why I usually put the page numbers in the notes, so I can go back, go to the book and find these things. This is something that every morning I try to get up and read a little bit from the Meyer material, particularly the Might of Thoughts. And this morning I kind of came up with a little introduction of things that I might want to talk about this afternoon. The next thing I want to cover is reincarnation, which is a very big topic. So again, I'll try to give an overview. We all have what's called a spirit form. And the spirit form exists in an area of our middle brain called the superior colliculus. It's also the area of our brain that integrates our senses like hearing and sight and smell and those kind of things. This spirit form is a fragment of the universal consciousness. So it's always neutral, positive. It's never what's called asartung. It's never out of control. It's your innermost creational self. And it kind of sends out impulses that are kind of a guiding to your material consciousness. We have what's called a spiritual consciousness, which I just quickly described. We also have a material consciousness. The material consciousness is your psyche. The psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness, your personality in this lifetime, is part of your material consciousness. Your subconscious mind and your unconscious mind are all part of this material personality. Now, we have multiple lifetimes because we need to live many, many material lives for our spirit form to benefit from the experiences of these material lives. So the spirit form, it grows in wisdom from the experiences in your material life. It needs a material consciousness, because right now our spiritual consciousness is not completely alert yet. It's not completely conscious yet. And this process of going into the physical and living a material life helps it evolve its understanding and its knowledge. And it has the accumulated evolution of all of your previous lifetimes. And spirit forms generally on the earth are about 4 million years old. So your spirit form, deep embedded in its internal knowledge, has the knowledge of your previous personalities going back at least 4 million years old. If your spirit form came here on a ship, came to the earth on a ship, say 100s of thousands of years ago, your spirit form may in fact be 8 million, 12 million years old. If that's the case, you have a bit of an obligation to help your fellow Earth humans in their evolution. And that's why Billy's here. Now, his spirit form is extremely ancient. It's 9.6 billion years old, many, many times older than any other spirit form on the earth. And he has been through incarnations for many, many, many years, through all of the seven evolutionary steps that we go through as human beings. He's referred to as the universal prophet because his spirit form is here to help speed up the evolution of the people here on the earth. And that's one thing that we really need to do, is speed up our evolution, because our population is so huge and we're getting the technical ability now to develop things like atomic bombs. So it's very critical now that we start to ramp up in our social and our spiritual evolvement. Otherwise, we're going to destroy ourselves and the planet. Now, when you die, this spirit form comes out of the body and it takes your consciousness with it. And it goes into what's called the spirit realm, which is kind of an energy band around our planet. And every spirit form, and there are billions of them, has in this other realm a little area it's set aside called the overall consciousness block. And it brings with it the consciousness, the material consciousness from your previous life, and it's placed in something called the overall consciousness block, where your lifetime is kind of reviewed, your experiences are distilled down into what are called their essences, their evolutive essences. So the knowledge you've had with regard to love, wisdom, logic, discernment, reasonableness, even temperedness, these kinds of things, alertness, all these kind of evolutive values then are distilled down into their neutral positive essence. They're absorbed by the spirit form. So the spirit form gets more intelligent, more evolved, more powerful with each reincarnation. And the next thing, once all of your previous information, previous life lessons are processed and stored, now the spirit form will generate the new consciousness, the new subconscious, and the subconscious is programmed with these evolutive essences from all your previous lives. Your unconsciousness is created, your new personality is formed, and then shortly thereafter, the spirit form is pulled into the body of a child. It enters the superior colliculus of the brain of the fetus 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg and the new consciousness comes in. Now, in the subconscious of the child is all the evolutive values of the previous lifetimes. So this child will start out at its last level of evolution. Even though it has to learn to talk and walk and go to the restroom again and all of those really basic things, it's still at the level of evolution of its previous lifetime. So it will be impulsed by the subconsciousness and impulsed by the spiritual consciousness. And those impulses will act as kind of a guiding light as it continues to evolve during this lifetime. That's one of the creational natural laws. Animals reincarnate, plants do as well, people also. The next topic that I want to start on is these hurricanes, related to these hurricanes that we're experiencing. And what I'll have to do is make a few adjustments here, and then I'll play the first clip, which is going to talk about Hurricane Irma. The second clip will talk about Hurricane Irma again. I'm going to talk a little bit about Hurricane Harvey and try to put this into context with the Meyer teaching and what this tells us about our future, why these things are happening, and try to make a little sense out of the whole situation. So if you can bear with me for just a few moments, I will set up our next clip.
Major storm Hurricane Irma is now the most powerful storm ever recorded in the open Atlantic Ocean. It has winds of 185 miles an hour, and it's closing in on the Northeast Caribbean. That has one forecaster warning that the Leeward Islands are going to get destroyed. Ed Rappaport is the acting. In the day's other major story, Hurricane Irma is now the most powerful storm ever recorded in the open Atlantic Ocean. It has winds of 185 miles an hour, and it's closing in on the Northeast Caribbean. That has one forecaster warning that the Leeward Islands are going to get destroyed. Ed Rappaport is the acting director of the National Hurricane Center, and he joins me from Miami. Ed Rappaport, the strongest storm ever in the Atlantic. What is known about Irma right now?
Well, the winds are at what we would put the Category 5 level. That's as high as it goes. And the concern is that we don't expect there to be a lot of change in intensity over the next several days as the hurricane moves to the west. And here's the forecast from the National Hurricane Center. And we've got the center forecast to move across the northeastward Lesser Antilles and then very near the north coast of Puerto Rico, Hispaniola, and then Cuba as a Category 4 or perhaps still Category 5 hurricane.
Why are you saying you don't expect much change in the storm?
Well, for one, this is as strong as we've ever seen in that area, so we don't the conditions have come together in such a way as to produce this, but it's not clear how we could see something even stronger than that. We do see fluctuations at times with storms that are this intense, so may go up a little, may come down, but regardless, when it approaches the islands, potentially makes landfall in some of the islands farther to the west, it will be Category 4, Category 5, maybe Category 3, but the differences are really going to be inconsequential. It's a potentially devastating hurricane and with severe impacts from wind, storm surge, and possibly also rainfall.
And Ed, we know right now it's in the Caribbean and the islands, but what about in the United States? What are concerns? What should they be now?
Yeah, the next 24 hours will be a significant concern for the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. But downstream from that, over the next several days, we're going to see the hurricane move along the north coast of Cuba and then likely turn to the north. What we don't know quite yet is where that turn is going to occur relative to Florida, east coast, west coast, over the state. So at this stage, what we're looking for is impacts on South Florida, most likely over the weekend, perhaps beginning on Saturday, with the worst of it to be on Sunday.
Ed Rappaport with another big storm that you're watching. Thank you very much.
So this trend that we're seeing is part of a trend that has been discussed in the Meyer material, that we're going to see storms, floods, forest fires, because of the tremendous overpopulation that occurs on the earth. And I'm going to explain the link between the two, the overpopulation, the fires, the hurricanes, and whatnot. This is not a link that the Meyer material spells out. It's something I've come up with based on my research. So take it or leave it. I mean, it seems to be reasonable to me. I wanted to just describe Hurricane Harvey quickly. It's an active tropical cyclone that made landfall in Texas. It is the first major hurricane to make landfall in the United States since 2005. It has dropped, I believe, 51 inches, 50, almost 52 inches of rain. It had sustained gusts of wind of up to 140 miles per hour. 300,000 people at one point were out of power. It's the greatest flooding, I think, that's ever occurred from a hurricane. Waters in some areas 12 feet deep. Houston was completely flooded, downtown Houston. It dumped more rain than any other hurricane that has hit the continental United States. It holds the record for the highest precipitation for a tropical cyclone. Now, that started August 27th. Now, September 6th started Hurricane Irma, which is a Category 5 hurricane that is approaching Florida at the time that I wrote this. It's a storm that's 185 miles per hour winds in this storm, even higher before it approached the Caribbean. As many as 650,000 people have been evacuated from Florida. Many of the islands in the Caribbean have been completely trashed. Puerto Rico had a million people lose power, and these climatic changes will be evident that they will lead to hurricanes and whatnot. So what is causing this? How is this related to overpopulation? Now, deforestation is the clearing of the Earth's forests on a massive scale, and that's what's occurring. We have 9 billion people on the planet, and we keep using our bulldozers to destroy the forested and wooded areas. In the wooded areas, they moderate the climate. So when it gets real hot in the summer, in the temperate and the tropical forests, in the temperate forest where I live, in the tropical forest, there is a shade that's produced that's really awesome. If you've ever been in that kind of forest, if you're out west, you probably have never experienced this, where the shade can be 20 to 30 degrees cooler, and it'll be dark in there for miles like that, which is a phenomenal thing. That cools the air in the summer. So these forests work as this great, great moderating tool. In the winter, they stop the reflection of the sun. In other words, if you have an area that's nothing but snow and ice, it's going to reflect a lot of light back, and because of that, a lot of heat. The forest acts to hold in the heat in the winter. So they're cooling the air in the summer, and they're holding the heat in the winter. Well, they also promote rain to fall on a healthy level, on a consistent basis, because of the The rough surface area of the top of the trees causes a kind of turbulence that leads to reasonable rains on a regular basis rather than torrential floods, which occurs when the forests are not there to continually promote the mellower rains. And deforestation will result in patchy landscape, fragmented forest, which are prone to damage by wind and fire, which is what is occurring. We're seeing tremendous fires in the West Coast. Other things quickly that the forests do, they uptake CO2. Now, CO2 in concentrations can cause, they say, allegedly, global warming. And the forests transfer energy to the surrounding area. This is called sensible heat. They also release vapor. This is a whole big cycle that exists in nature. And we are destroying that cycle because of overpopulation, because we keep clearing the forest to make room for the people. So let's just take a quick look at overpopulation. And there is a tremendous overpopulation that's occurring on the earth. We have about 10,000 newborns per hour. It's just staggering. Starvation on a level we've never heard of before. 18, 20 million people starving to death every year. We have small countries like Bangladesh, which is the size of Iowa, that has a population of 167 million, so to speak. The population of the world grows by 77 million to 100 million or so every year. There is something, there's a page up on the Future of Mankind site that's called the Overpopulation Bomb. Maybe I can find that page. I wasn't able to update my notes directly with this. I survive on my notes a lot. So in 1995, this page says 1 second resulted every second six humans were born, every minute about 360, every hour 21,000 were born, and every day 518,000 humans. And that translates out to 189 million humans born per year. So we're in a very difficult situation of overpopulation that's occurring on the earth. A very challenging situation indeed. A very dangerous situation for the people of the earth. And that's why we're having these hurricanes that are occurring. 4 million people die on the street every year in India. We have a tremendous global water crisis that's occurring right now, particularly in the center area, which is called the Ogallala Aquifer, which is the giant aquifers that exist in the center of the United States, which are being depleted. That'll be another thing that occurs when people start to see the tremendous water shortage. I'm going to play a real quick clip. It's going to talk about water scarcity, which is one of the things that we're going to face very shortly.
You might have heard that we're running out of fresh water. This might sound strange to you because if you live in a place where water flows freely from the tap or shower at any time, it sure doesn't seem like a big deal. It's just there, right? Wrong. The only obvious thing about fresh water is how much we need it. Because it's essential to life, we need to think about it carefully. Right now, at this very moment, some people, women and girls in particular, walk hours and miles per day to get fresh water. And even then, it may not be clean. Every 15 seconds, a child dies due to waterborne diseases. This is tragic. The most compelling reasons to think about fresh water therefore have to do with what we might call the global common good. This is not something we normally think about, but it means recognizing how much fresh water matters for the flourishing of human and non-human life on Earth, now and in the future. How do we think about something as local as our faucets and as global as fresh water? Is there a connection between them? Many people assume that fresh water shortages are due to individual wastefulness, running the water while you brush your teeth, for example, or taking really long showers. Most of us assume, therefore, that water shortages can be fixed by improving our personal habits, taking shorter showers, or turning off the water while we brush our teeth. But global fresh water scarcity neither starts nor ends in your shower. Globally, domestic use of fresh water accounts for only 8% of consumption. 8%! Compare that to the 70% that goes to agriculture and the 22% that goes to industrial uses. Now,
so most of the water is being used to feed people by agriculture. So this is the dilemma we're in. Such a perfect time to focus on these spiritual laws. For example, one of the creational natural laws of the universe is called the law of love, and we're referring to the highest form of love, effective love, love that's based on reverence, love that is stable, that isn't changing all the time. So this is a love that's talked about in the Meyer material in very, very beautiful, very profound ways. For example, the Meyer information says love is the highest principle in creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. And let me explain some of this absolute logic related to love. Because the creation works on repeating patterns. So if you look at, for example, the galaxy rotates in a spiral. And it has arms that look very much like a hurricane in its rotation. And the planets rotate around the stars while the star is moving around the galaxy. So there's kind of a spiral motion of the planets around the stars, and the solar systems are in these arms of the galaxy, the spiral arms that look much like the spiraling arms that are in a hurricane. There is a branching structure that appears in your circulatory system, that appears in rivers, that shows up in trees, that also appears as lightning goes across the sky. You see, the creation is all that, everything that you see, the universal structure, comes from the same consciousness. So you see the same patterns forming over and over again. So that's why if we go to other worlds, we're not going to see weird gray aliens. We're going to see people. They might be taller. They might be shorter. They might have different colored skin. We're going to see trees. We're going to see water. The planets are going to be circulating yellow stars like ours that have a certain amount of heat and the right kind of light. This is part of this super intelligence, this universal consciousness. And it functions by these fixed patterns because of this principle called love. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. But this universal intelligence is a spiritual energy. It doesn't have a personality like you or I, but it has the ability to create life. And it creates plant life and animal life. It creates the planets. and the stars. And it does all this in love. And Billy's third contact, a woman named Semyasi, said that love and wisdom go together. And the creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. And that's the law of love. The second law of nature is the fundamental law of all evolution, which is striving. So without striving, there is no life. Without striving, every animal, every plant has to strive. And if there is no striving, there is no happiness. And the book called The Way to Live is probably Billy's number one example of teaching about striving. Striving requires an expenditure of effort and must be achieved through hard work. Striving is not simply dropped into your lap. There are circumstances also which work against the striving. So you'll find in your life things that oppose your striving, and don't try not to get frustrated. There are multifarious powers which work against your striving. And this is because in nature, there has to be an opposite pole positioned against the striving. Based on the teaching of the creational laws, there must always be two poles, a negative and a positive, a pro and a con. And together, these two poles produce a oneness and equalizedness. So if you're unhappy, start striving, start your work, get back to work. We all have many areas of work. Even if you happen to be out of work at the particular time, you know, clean your garage, clean your car, get exercise. There's always work to do. The next law of nature, the law of the universe, is the law of harmony. And the law of harmony is how that bipolar structure we were talking about. But it also deals with the law of how we should think. The law of harmony says we should think in a neutral, positive way. Now, what are the neutral, positive thoughts? Let me give you seven neutral, positive thoughts. Tell yourself, I am optimistic, I'm confident, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm thankful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm in harmony. If you can have those seven neutral positive thoughts, you can be in harmony. And harmony is critical to maintain happiness in life. And I want to read to you something that I came across going through this Might of Thoughts thing again over and over again. Problem-causing thoughts and the evaluations and the feelings which arise from them, which are unconsciously tended and nurtured and which operate automatically, throw the psyche into turmoil. It is these automatic thoughts which are the crucial point. Because it is through them that feelings are disturbed, and thereby also the psyche. So as you have these negative thoughts, you'll have automatic negative thoughts, which are these things that you always think when you come across a topic which triggers you, and you have these rotating thoughts which run out of control. And they disturb your feelings, and when they disturb your feelings, eventually they'll disturb your psyche. So you need to get out of that whole negative habit, negative rotation of thoughts. On the other hand, if you have good thoughts, you'll have good feelings, because the feelings follow the thoughts. The feelings discharge energy of the thoughts. Without the feelings, your thoughts would run overheated. So the feelings come from the thoughts. The feelings will then lead you to habits. And if you have good thoughts and good feelings, you'll be led into good habits. Very interesting how that works. And these good habits that you start to form will start to bring in good circumstances into your life. So that was Law of Harmony, long-winded. There's a whole book written on it. It's called The Might of Thoughts, Macht der Gedanken. And if you're using the Law of Love, the Law of Striving, and the Law of Harmony together, you have the greatest chances of fulfilling the laws of prosperity and abundance. Every life form, therefore, every human being has the opportunity for plentiful abundance to be able to live and evolve without living in want. Now, because we violated the laws related to population, because there are 9 billion people on this planet, it makes it much, much more difficult to fulfill and have the law of abundance in your life. If we could slowly reduce our population, it would help all of us to have a happier, more focused life. I mean, it's like Beijing in China. They have 52 lanes circling their city of 13 million people. It's very, very difficult to be happy under those kinds of circumstances. In order to be happy, we need to learn to clarify our thoughts, and we need to stay out of what's called automatic thinking, because automatic thinking is what triggers the negative feelings and the negative whole negative function of your psyche. So one of the ways you can do that is to clarify your thoughts, to control your thoughts. Clarify means to make a statement or a situation less confused and more clearly comprehensible. That's one of the ways you can know if you're in neutral positive thinking. You have a clarity. If you're in negative thinking or too positive, you'll lose your clarity. You'll have confusion. You'll have uncertainty. Clarify means to make clear, to make easier to understand, to rule out uncertainty, confusion, no ambiguity. The word confusion means there's a lack of understanding. There's uncertainty. Confusion comes from a root Latin word, which means to pour together, to mingle together. So with confusion, the boundary layers between things are lost and distinctions are lost and our thoughts become jumbled up. So what we're trying to do is clarify these thoughts. That means you have effort, you practice repeating these positive, neutral positive thoughts. You have patience. Eventually, that will lead to a harmonious life. All wrong, useless, negative, and impure thoughts are eliminated in order to make space for the pure, neutral, positive, equalized thoughts. Now, one of these six prophets that are in the line of Nicodemus, Edward Albert Meyer's previous personalities, was an individual named Emmanuel. And he wrote, he said, "Truly I say to you, a love that is unlimited, constant, and unfailing is unconditional and is pure love, in whose fire all that is impure and evil is burned." And he said that everything human within the human must die, but everything of creation within them must rise and embrace creation. Everything the human possesses has as its origin the creation. Therefore, everything belongs to the creation. Human beings eventually will transform their entire spiritual lives and perfect them so that they will become one with creation. That means every human being eventually gets up through all these seven evolutionary steps, they become Ishwishes. It's an amazing, amazing thing that we'll all get to this level. It's amazing. So these are the principles related to love, striving, The seven neutral positive thoughts again is, I am confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm thankful, I'm enthusiastic, and I'm in harmony. We talked about clarifying thoughts, controlling thoughts. I wanted to, in the last few minutes here, and I mean the last indeed few minutes here, to talk very quickly about the creation. There is roughly an elliptical shape to creation. Our universe has roughly a elliptical shape. It has seven counter-rotating spheres or bands. If you could look at the universe cut open, it would look like the concentric rings on a tree. The centermost is where the Big Bang originated. And these layers, these different layers, have different functions. The fourth layer is where the universal belt is, the universal material belt. All the planets, the stars exist there. The galaxies, the solar systems exist there. It's expanding. It will expand for another, well, it's been expanding for 46 trillion years. It will expand for a total 155 trillion years. And during that time, it will create more stars, more galaxies, more planets, more human spirit forms, more animals, more plants. Within this material belt, there are seven different space-time configurations. So you can think of seven different dimensions, roughly. And each one of these dimensions is like a different reality, but they're kind of, in some ways, variations on each other. The Pleiaren live in a different space-time configuration, but they have their own constellation of Lyra Vega, just like we do. But the two constellations are different. So the universe is a very strange and mysterious thing. We don't know as much as we would like to about the creation. We continue studying it. Now, the material belt has two belts on either side of it. The outer belt is the what's called the transformation belt, and it sends negative energies into the material belt. Before our material belt is another belt called Earth space, and it's sending positive energies. So the positive and the negative energies meet in the material belt. They produce together a second kind of energy, which eventually manifests in material life. Material, I should say, just material, like the stars, the galaxies, the gases, the planets, all these kind of things. So that's the quick overview of the creation, the bands of the universe. I just briefly touched on the Giza intelligences early, but I want to finish. We'll have to kind of skip over that right now because of time. I want to talk about something called the innermost creational eye, which you can read about in the book The Way to Live, and a little bit on page, I believe, 418. But we're about out of time, unfortunately. I just want to read this very, very quickly. 418, if we can. It says, the eye attempts there's a false eye and there's a inner eye that you each have, and the two are kind of at war at each other. Just be aware of that your false eye attempts to complicate and deny everything, because it is fundamentally endangered by knowledge and evolution. I want to thank everyone that will listen to the show in archives. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.